Okay, welcome to the Digital Underground podcast. This is a special preview edition for Black Hat. I have two guests on the line. I have my the other editor of Threat Post, Mike Mimoso, is here, and our other writer, Brian Donahue, one of our other writers, is also on the line. So we're going to talk a little bit about what we expect to see coming up this week at Black Hat, and kind of what we're looking forward to, what we're sort of dreading, all that kind of stuff. So. Brian, did you go last year? I can't even remember.
I went last year, and it was my first time going to Black Hat.
And so what was your, what was your, overall impression last year? Like, as somebody, you know, you're relatively new to security and all that, just sort of being dropped into that, feeding frenzy.
I thought it was hectic. It gets pretty wild in there during the day. And that that second day when you're sitting in the media room at like 6 o'clock and they close it off and it's just like a bunch of sweaty reporters trying to meet deadline.
Yeah, it's not pretty in there.
And the after leaving the keynote is incredibly hectic too.
Yeah, it's you're right. That media room, you know, by the end of the second day, kind of smells like, you know, a press box in like a middle of July baseball game. Like, there's nothing good going on, and there's just a bunch of angry, like, you know, self-righteous reporters in there, like, you know, trying to file stuff and shoot videos and interview people all at the same time.
And then the Black Hat PR people are just like out of nowhere, like, all right, media room's closed. And it's like the best thing that I'd heard the whole time I was there.
So I have to leave now. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Just blame Vegas. I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
It really, well, I mean, that's the root of most problems, especially these things.
I am interested to see if Mandalay Bay holds the crowd better than Caesars did.
I think it will. I don't know if you guys have ever been to that conference center, but it's weird. Like, it's not really close to the hotel itself. It's like you have to walk a solid mile inside the hotel to get to the conference center.
Good news.
Oh, it's insane. It's completely nuts. Like, I think, I mean, I'm not even staying there, and I'll probably get there quicker than people that are staying there.
So I've heard they have quite a nice pool is the only thing that I've heard about about Mandalay Bay.
Yeah, I think that's the main attraction. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm not really sure. And I guess they just, I mean, I guess they felt it outgrew Caesars, which is probably true, because you could barely move in the hallways when they were changing sessions and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was like scary crowded in there after the keynote last year. I did not have a fun time walking down the hallway.
No, yeah, and that was the
not too long ago, they had the vendor booths were in that hallway too.
That's right.
It was even a bigger disaster.
That's right. It was like only about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I can sort of remember the days when you would just come up those escalators to that middle floor, and there were only like four little tabletop vendor booths there, and that was it.
Right.
Like, they were right outside where those escalators are, and they only took up, you know, maybe 1/10 of the conference space on that floor. And, you know, by last year they had that entire top floor plus that middle floor of conference space all banged out, plus all the meeting suites and everything like that. So, yeah, I guess it just got too big, but at the same time, I fear change, so I'm not really happy about this. You know, I knew where everything was at Caesars, even though I didn't necessarily like that hotel. But, you know, I'm sure they don't care all that much what we think anyway.
No.
So, you know, I was looking through the schedule trying to see what kind of stuff was interesting to write about. You know, we've done a bunch of preview stories on the site, as have, you know, a lot of other reporters, and there's plenty of good talks. I mean, they have four tracks. It seems like down from, I think there was like 15 a couple of years ago when they just completely blew things out. But there's some really good, like, you know, the first day I'm always interested to hear Dan Gear talk. Mike, I know you've heard him speak a million times, as I have, and interviewed him a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're going to learn, you're never going to come away from one of Dan's talks thinking, wow, that was a waste of my time.
No, he's a very unique mind and a different kind of thinker. And the best part about Dan Gere keynotes is there are no slides. He reads off a piece of paper. You don't know he's reading, but he's reading off a piece of paper, and it's, you know, chances are 9 times out of 10 it's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. You know, I've read through a bunch of his speeches, even ones that I sat through and listened to, in person, and they read like him just sitting there telling you stories. Right. And they're so good. Like, if you've ever tried to actually write a speech, it's really hard. You know, and to write one that you're delivering to that kind of audience, you know, 15 or 18,000 crazy security guys, is really difficult. And I'm not really sure what Dan's going to talk about. You know, the title of his talk is Cybersecurity as Real Politics, but I don't know what that means. Could be anything. But knowing Dan, it'll be great. You know, you'll come out of there thinking, wow, that's the smartest guy I've ever met.
Right.
You know, so that should be good. And I doubt there will be anybody sitting there with eggs under their chair this year.
Like a year ago.
Yeah. You don't think there's not going to be any heckling going on?
Unlikely. Even though Dan works for InQtel, which is affiliated with the CIA, he's possibly the most respected guy in the security community. You know, he's kind of unassailable. So hopefully, it'll just be applause and, people throwing rose petals at him. Not eggs. So what are the, Mike, when you look through the schedule trying to plan out what we're going to write about, what are the things that kind of caught your attention the first day or so?
Overall, this is really strong. There are a lot of interesting topics and just ranging across the board from mobile to, you know, good old-fashioned IE exploits. Some interesting stuff I'm looking forward to. David Litchfield is going to take on Oracle. It's been a couple of years since he's done that, so it should be interesting to hear what he's got to say. That's always entertaining. I mean, some of the stuff we've written about already, the Android hack that you wrote about from Blue Box, it'd be interesting to see what comes out of that session. Some more stuff on Beast, which is the SSL bug that was out a couple of years ago, an exploit. I guess there's some kind of update on that. Just a lot of good stuff. Unfortunately, I think it's on Tuesday that there are like 4 or 5 great sessions all at 3:30.
Yeah.
Which, good for the show, bad planning for us, I guess. But, Legal Landmines for Security Researchers, an interesting panel that kind of hits home with our audience, too. Just some of the hurdles and stuff that they run into in terms of disclosure around bug hunting. I think that has a lot of potential.
That's the one with Marsha Hoffman and Trey Ford and Kevin Bankston, right? Yeah, that should be a good one.
That'll be really good for sure because, Marsha's really smart and she's been in the community for a really long time and is not afraid to say what she thinks, which is great. Trey's been seeing the thing from all different angles, you know, being a researcher, working for Black Hat for a while, and, you know, being now back on the vendor side. So I think that'll be good. And, I'm interested to see. I was kind of surprised that people didn't pay a little more attention to that, the Android bug that, the Blue Box guys, are going to be talking about.
Yeah.
Cause, you know, they didn't totally promote it all that much. Like they're, you know, I know that besides me, only a few other people wrote about it. But it's, if you read the details of it, it's terrifying. Like they, you know, you can essentially get any app to impersonate a trusted app and get whatever permissions you want, depending on the model phone and a couple of other factors. But, you know, you can take complete control of the device. You can break out of the Adobe sandbox and run, you know, whatever code you want. You can sniff network traffic, anything you want, basically. And people, I don't know if there's just been there's some fatigue with these big, you know, internet killing bugs or whatever, you know, with Heartbleed and whatever else, if people were just a little worn out from that stuff. But, the Blue Box guys seem to have a backlog of these just absolutely brutal Android bugs that they can just pluck out whenever they want.
It's that pesky certificate validation stuff that nobody seems to get right.
I'm surprised by that, too, because today, that bad USB briefing has been getting a ton of media coverage today, which is the Carson Knoll and Jacob mm-hmm. Lell talk about self-replicating USB malware.
Yeah, I know. But the weird thing about that is people have... who trusts USB sticks? Anyone who's been paying attention doesn't trust them, hasn't for 10 years now.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a cool talk, but it seems so, Jeff Forrestal's talk seems very broad and all-encompassing, and this bad USB one seems very, very focused on one pretty obscure thing.
Yeah, well, it's Carson Knoll.
Yeah.
Didn't you interview him last year, Brian?
Yeah.
your eyes were just completely glazed over.
I recorded the audio from his briefing last year, and I had to listen to it like 7 times before I was able to write a seemingly meaningful report on it.
This is one show where the audio recorder is a must.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's no question. Because there's so much stuff that it's just hard to take it all in, you know, and a lot of the talks, they went through a period a few years ago when there was a lot of non-technical or not so technical talks where they got a lot broader, but now it seems like they've completely gone the other direction, which is good, you know, and gone way back to the super technical, you know, very deep research talks, which is great.
Yeah, one thing I'm surprised to see, too, is a lot of talks about, I'm not surprised, but about point-of-sale security, point-of-sale terminals, and it probably has a lot to do with maybe the timing of the submission deadline was probably not too far after the Target thing, so a lot of people are capitalizing on it. But even with that breach, there wasn't a lot that was entirely new about that, and I don't know how much value a lot of those sessions are going to have in terms of breaking news and new research, but I guess it's worth watching.
I plan to sit in on the Journey to Protect Points of Sale, which is by some guy named Nir Vaultman from NRC Corporation, about, you know, it's basically about scrapers and what you can do to protect against them. It'll be interesting to see if there's anything new there.
Yeah, I've never really heard anybody describe a really effective defense for that kind of malware. Because if you can get it onto those point of sale devices, which typically don't really have, you know, some of them have some endpoint protection on them, but a lot of them don't. They just rely on the security of the network that they're on, and access controls and that kind of thing. But if you get that kind of memory scraping malware on there, it's game over. You know, and the Target one was definitely obviously the most high profile one that we've seen where that was deployed. But if you read that that stuff that came from TrustWave the other day about the point of sale malware, they're seeing it in a bunch of investigations. They've been doing it small franchised type businesses that are getting targeted with that stuff. And we all know those guys don't have a ton of resources at their disposal to deal with it.
Yeah, I wrote about that not too long ago, too, how they rely on the point-of-sale vendors, and they're just basically churning stuff out the door. They don't care or don't even realize it's, you know, that they have any measure of responsibility when it comes to security either. So,
yeah, that's tough.
There's no winning there.
Nope.
Speaking of churning stuff out the door, it's going to be hard not to sit in on Chris Valasek and Charlie Miller's survey of remote automotive attack surfaces.
It's probably not that different than the talk that they've given before and they gave at our conference in Dominican Republic a few months ago, but you know it'll be funny and you know there'll be some good good one-liners that come out of it. And they probably do have some new stuff that they're
I think the new stuff that they're trying to look at is, so thus far they've just looked at those two cars. I think they're now trying to broaden that and see what they can say about the industry as a whole, in like which manufacturers are doing a good job with security and which ones aren't doing a good job.
Yeah, which it will, you know, it'll be a short list, I would guess, of the ones that are.
Right.
You know, if I know they've found problems in pretty much anything that they've decided to look at, you know, which isn't really surprising. That's not something, it's not an issue that any of those auto manufacturers have spent any time on, you know, because they're, I can't remember whether it was Charlie or Chris when we were talking to him in the Dominican, Brian, where they were like, you know, 1 cent spent on that is a penny that they're not spending on research or marketing or something like that, you know, that is costing them money.
So, yeah, and the research that they did to build these cars that are coming out now was done 5 years ago.
Oh, easily. Oh, yeah. The development cycle for cars is so long. It's so long. And that's why it's so hard for these auto manufacturers to pivot, like, in terms of, like, consumer demand, design, let alone something like this. You know, security of embedded systems, what do they know about that? You know, I don't know any big-name security guys that have gotten hired by Ford or Tesla or anything like that. You know, I haven't seen any of that happen. So it'll be interesting to see where that all goes. So the first day, yeah, definitely looks packed. And the second day as well. And the second day to me is always even more difficult because you try and cram in a bunch of stuff on the first day. You probably have stuff left over that you didn't even have time to write or post or, you know, stuff like that. And then there's just another blitz of, you know, super technical stuff that you're trying to get through.
Day two keynote listed, which is interesting. I don't know if they're skipping it this year or.
Yeah, I think they are. They haven't always done it. There's been a few years I remember where there hasn't necessarily been a day two keynote. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, it might just be that maybe they didn't feel like they needed one and they wanted to get more technical sessions in there rather than just have like somebody from DHS talk about God knows what.
Yeah, which personally I'd prefer, but.
Oh, hell yeah.
They probably skipped out the keynote so that they could have like 10 talks on breaking home security devices.
Or some sponsored talks or something like that, you know. But the one that I definitely want to see on the second day, I think it's one of the earlier ones, is the one from Alex Stamos, who, you know, it hasn't even been that long since he joined Yahoo. What, like 3 or 4 months, Mike? Like, you know, sometime in the spring, I think.
Yeah.
And he's done a ton of things there already that, you know, are public. Like within a few weeks of him getting there, they announced that they had encrypted the links between their data centers like Google had before them. So his talk is lessons from 6 months at Yahoo. So that should be really cool, I think. You know, that play, you forget how big Yahoo still is, how much infrastructure and how interwoven into the internet they are. You know, that's still a huge, massive internet infrastructure company, even though they're, you know, kind of a legacy company at this point.
Yeah, and they lagged for so long, especially on the crypto stuff, that it'll be interesting to hear kind of, you know, what resistance there was, if any, you know, once he took over and, you know, some of those hurdles, too. I always find that stuff interesting to hear about, as well as the technical details.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I don't know him very well, but I've spoken to him a few times, and I get the feeling that he wouldn't have taken that job if he had gotten the sense that there was going to be any of that kind of resistance.
Right.
To, you know, like internal political type BS. Mm-hmm. I think they had gotten beaten up in the press, you know, over the last couple of years. And, you know, people like Seguin and others had kind of thrown some rocks their way. And I think they, you know, realized we need to get somebody in here with a lot of credibility to help us fix this. And they did a good job, I think, hiring Alex. He seems to have gotten a lot done in a pretty short period of time.
Yeah. There's an interesting debate too Thursday afternoon, the second day, about the NSA. They're pitting somebody from the EFF against a former House of Representatives folks in there. I forget exactly who it is now, but that should be interesting. And of course, they've got it up against Bruce Schneier and against a good crypto talk by Tom Toshik and a couple other folks on crypto secrets.
Oh, geez.
So. Again, cramming one time slot with some really good talks. But that NSA debate should, I don't know, either bore people or if it gets lively enough, could stir some interest.
That should be a good one.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that should be really good. I didn't realize Tashik had a talk at this.
Yeah, it's something like 40 secrets that cryptographers don't want you to know about.
His talks just break my brain. Just unreal. Even, you know, speaking with him one-on-one, it's so hard to keep up with what he's saying.
Right.
Oh, yeah. 48 Dirty Little Secrets Cryptographers Don't Want You to Know.
That's it, yeah.
Maybe three of which will, you know, I'd be able to understand. There'd be way too much math involved in that talk.
The debate is Mark J. Cox and J. Michael Allen, by the way.
Oh, right.
The EFF, yeah.
That should be really good. So the EFF guys are, you know...
They don't pull any punches.
No, they're not afraid of anything. They just, you know, they throw bombs whenever they feel like it.
I'm excited about the Billy Rios talk on pulling back the curtain on airport security, which I did not get to see at the Security Analyst Summit.
Oh, it's hilarious. You talk about, like... So, like, he'll tell you right up front, he's like, none of this stuff is, you know, even remotely difficult to execute. He's, you know, and the stuff that he was able to get through there was just unreal. It was completely ridiculous. That's a really good one. People should definitely go check out. Anything Billy does is worth your time, but that one especially is really interesting, especially once, you know, you'll be thinking about your flight home in a couple of days and you're like, should I get on this plane? Which flight are you on, Billy? I don't know if I want to be on that one, you know? I think overall, the as you said, Mike, the schedule looks really, really strong this year. There were a few years there, you know, in the mid, late 2000s where you're kind of stretching to find stuff to write about that wasn't either like completely, you know, super broad or just down in the weeds, like you couldn't even translate into English. But they've got a lot of really strong speakers this year. And the other thing I kind of noticed just like glancing through the schedule, there is a huge number of international speakers this year. I mean, they've always had, you know, a decent number, but you just look through, like, it seems like over 50% of the speakers are, you know, non-American speakers. Just a huge number of them.
Yeah, that's been trending for a few years now, and it's pretty cool that, you know, that they've opened up the show like that. I mean, it's definitely not like the old Black Hat, especially in the last couple of years, last two or three years. The quality of the sessions, like you said, has gone way up.
Question.
And they've broadened. You know, I mean, you've got Charlie Miller and guys like that speaking this year, but it's probably been a couple of years since those guys have been on the agenda. And I don't know if that's, you know, just that they weren't submitting stuff or if they were, the organizers were purposely looking for some new blood, but it's definitely turned around the tone of the show.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both. If I remember right, didn't Charlie say something a couple of years ago about he wasn't going to submit anymore because I don't remember what happened. Like, they rejected one of his talks and he was like, this is kind of ridiculous, you know, looking at these other ones that were accepted. You know, I'm done submitting to Black Hat or something like that.
That was fairly recent. It may have even been last year, if not definitely the year before.
I think it was, but yeah.
They didn't give the car hacking talk at Black Hat last year.
No.
No.
I think the first time they gave it was somewhere overseas, if I remember right. But yeah, they, you know, that's such a great talk. For people that haven't seen it before or watched the videos of it, it's so great. Like, just the stunts they pulled with this car. And, you know, Charlie drove the car through the back of his garage at home, you know, remotely, like with the computer, smashed it into the wall and stuff.
So
like
reckless.
That. It's so great. And, you know, like, you see the after pictures of the car itself and then like the pile of crap that they took off the car, like while they were modifying it, like sitting in Charlie's garage. It literally looks like a junk pile. And you're like, wait, how is this car even operating? You know, there's kind of like and some of the communications they had with the manufacturers are hilarious, you know, because they clearly didn't understand what these guys were doing or what they were capable of. You know, they were just like,
you're doing what?
Yeah, this might void the warranty. you think? Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's voided as soon as those guys bought it. You know, they're on some sort of blacklist, I'm sure, at this point. They probably can't rent a car in any of the 50 states. But yeah, so as much as this show, like, people sort of have like this love-hate relationship with it, like, they're like, you know, especially people that have been going for a long time, like we have Mike, people are like, I don't know, I'm so tired of Vegas and all the, you know, shenanigans there and blah, blah, blah. You know, to me, it's one of the funnest ones and, like, you know, certainly most informative ones we go to every year. And you just get to see people that, you know, you won't get to see the rest of the year, you know. Guys that come from Australia and New Zealand and China and, you know, Singapore and wherever else that don't really get to the States more than maybe once a year, and you don't have a chance to interact with in person.
Yeah, it's a totally different vibe than, say, RSA, and a better vibe, in my opinion.
It'd
be nice if maybe they could switch venues for the two shows. That would be
yes. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I would so much rather be getting on a plane to go to San Francisco next week than
for sure.
At any point than Las Vegas, yeah. I saw something, I think it was either Matt Blaze or I think it was Matt on Twitter said something like, at some point somebody's going to ask me, if you guys are so smart, how come you all go to Las Vegas in August every year? And I'm not going to have an answer. And people have asked me that question for 15 years. And I have no answer for it. Like, I just, you know, I think it all, you know, it was based on, that's where Jeff originally, you know, it was cheap to have it there because it's Las Vegas in August. And that's where, you know, it was easy to get cheap hotel rooms and cheap conference space, you know, 18 years ago or whatever.
Exactly.
So that's why it's still there. I wish they would reconsider that, but it's probably too late at this point. That ship has sailed.
Yeah.
So, well, we will see what we see when we get out there, which, you know, it all starts Tuesday. We'll be there Tuesday, and all the talks start Wednesday, Thursday, and then, you know, the aftermath and that kind of thing. And then DEF CON, which none of us are staying for because that would probably kill all of us. Certainly me, I'm way too old for that nonsense. But you should do that at some point, Brian, just to say that you've done it.
Stay for both or just go to DEF CON?
No, stay for both. Because
it's a long week in Vegas.
Oh, it's cheating if you only go to DEF CON. Like, that doesn't count.
Right.
Like, you're not... You don't get the full zombie effect of, you know, showing up at DEF CON like Friday morning and seeing people that have been wearing the same clothes since Tuesday, you know, and it's just...
And you recognize those clothes from Tuesday. That's
for sure.
Part.
Yeah, and you're like, wait a second, I saw that guy jump in the pool with those clothes on, and I know he didn't wash them. So, yeah, there's no way to describe, like, how you feel by the end of that Sunday when you get to the airport and you're like, oh, my God. You just, like, lost all faith in humanity.
And you got to take the red eye home.
Yes. Yeah. And you get home and your wife's like, who are you? What is going on? Yeah. It's just terrible.
Maybe I'll see if I can do that next year.
It's tough. It is. I haven't done it in a long time, probably 4 or 5 years. It's not a good feeling the next week. You know, your ears are ringing for slot machines for 5 days. You know. You
smell like Marlboros.
Every time the phone rings, you have a flashback.
Right. All you can drink is water and, like, Powerade. Yep, it's tough. So, all right. So, keep checking Threat Post throughout the week. We'll have tons of content on there, podcasts, probably some videos, lots of stories, and all that kind of stuff. And I think we're going to try and do some daily podcasts while we're there, like we did from RSA, and probably wrap up maybe the week after if we're all still alive at that point. So keep checking Threat Post. And,
we should also plug Vitaly Komlik, our friend's talk. He's doing his CompuTrace Backdoor Revisited, which he did at Security Analyst Summit in DR. And it was definitely an informative talk.
It is.
Very interesting stuff.
Yeah. If you guys haven't seen that, which, you know, most of the people haven't because our conference in Dominican is kind of a closed thing. It's really impressive. The work that those guys did on the CompuTrace stuff. You can look it up. I don't think there's a video publicly available right now, but I think the presentation is out there somewhere. It's Vitaly and someone else. I cannot remember who. I think it's a guy from Core Security, isn't it?
There's two other guys.
Okay.
It's Vitaly and it's Sergey Belov and Anibal Sacco, who is from...
He's from Core.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great talk. It's really impressive, and it's actually a little disconcerting as well when you realize what they're talking about. So that's definitely a good one to see. And I think they've updated it quite a bit since they did it in the Dominican. lots of more stuff to add. So yeah, so that'll be good. Definitely go check out Vitaly's talk. He's a great speaker. So all right, well, I'll see you guys in Vegas, and I look forward to having a good time out there.
See you in the desert.
See you there.
All right, guys, take care.
You too.
Bye.